Bankless Nation, happy second week of October. David and I are live in Salt Lake City at Permissionless.
The third Permissionless conference.
And we got a weekly roll-up to bring to you live.
Even though we're at a conference, the weekly roll-up must go on.
David's at a separate desk, and he was like, I feel so far away from you. I'm like, dude, we're usually like hundreds of miles away from each other when we're recording this. But this has been a big week for crypto. We got to start with talking about the Uniswap reveal. So the Unichain is coming to crypto, a new chain for Uniswap and DeFi. What does it do? Is it good for the Uni token? Those are some of the questions we'll talk about.
I think also, what does it mean for the Ethereum rollup-centric roadmap? I don't think it's going to change the roadmap at all, but how do people feel about the rollup-centric roadmap now that I think Ethereum's biggest app is now a chain? I think big implications. I think people are going to be chewing on this one for a while, including myself. Also, did HBO just figure out who Satoshi is? People coming into Bitcoin for the first time and deciding, and they're telling us exactly who Satoshi is.
Yeah.
They found him,
us. I'm sure they figured it out.
And then also, is Ethereum going to cut down on block times? Are we going to make the L1 great again? There is a brand new EIP endorsed, thumbed up by Justin Drake, as well as others. We're going to talk about what all of that means for Ethereum.
David, do you know the FBI launched a token?
Is it the FBI token?
It's not so fun, okay?
Wait, do I want to buy this or not buy this?
You don't want to buy it, unless you want to go to jail. Also, Gary Gensler sent another nasty gram to a crypto company. Which company is it going to be?
What week is it? That's every week.
That's happened at least six times this year. But they are fighting back, which is the good news. Also, let's go over a few metrics on the U.S. economy. Okay. It's kind of feeling good out there, yeah. And I want to share with you. So we'll get to that and more. But before we begin, I think we have a message from our friends and sponsors over at B3. This is like the core team behind Base, at least members of the former core team of Base. And they're getting into, what is this, on-chain gaming?
Yeah. Did you ever play like old Flash games, like Miniclip Arcade or Addicting Games?
I played like old Flash games. You're talking like in-browser Flash games.
In-browser Flash games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that is what B3 is.
Okay.
A layer 3 on top of Base. Partners with notable gaming brands such as Parallel, Mighty Bear Games, and Nifty Island. So if you want to play some fun, addicting games, B3 is the place. Bankless.cc/B3. Even though it is a base layer 3, it is also chain agnostic. So games can come from any chain to be deployed on basement.fun, that is their website, and create their own game-specific roll-up. So not only is Uniswap getting its own app chain, but any single Flash game that's ever existed can also get its own Flash
game. It's like a layer 3.
Chain. Game-specific roll-ups.
That's pretty cool.
You can earn XP, BP game tokens as well, so you can play games and earn tokens.
Of course you can, because this is crypto, right?
That was the crypto I was promised.
Well, maybe it's here, David. It's not looking like the crypto I was promised. At least it's not looking like the Uptober I was promised in the markets today. So let's talk about the Bitcoin price. And I need these prices for you. You've been busy at the conference, so hopefully they're right. But what are the pricing say?
Yeah, when Ryan Todd Adams puts in the prices, we all should everyone check out your own prices just in case.
Plus or minus 10% here.
10%. Nonetheless, Bitcoin start of the week, $60,000, 300, down 1.5%. Not terrible, but below the $60,000 mark right now at the time of recording, $59,545. Ether price starting the week, $2,330, up 1.5%. 2,366 is where we are currently, but the real alpha is actually in the stock market.
Stocks are
once again at all-time highs. I own fewer stocks, Ryan, than I own crypto, so my portfolio is not at all-time highs.
Should we have pivoted to stocks a year ago, David?
Yeah, right when people were saying pivot to AI.
Pivot to stocks. S&P all-time highs. NASDAQ like pretty much all-time highs. So this recession that everyone is talking about hasn't come. You remember the yen? Trade scare
trade
that happened.
Trade, that was for gone. That's a blip in the
when
charts.
When was that? Was that late August? That was like early October?
I don't even remember.
Neither does the market. Nah. That's the good news. Should we check on in on the ETF? So the Ethereum ETF flows. David, there were a number of days that were like straight zero
zeros
across the board.
Zeros. Yeah, call it a wash for the past, like, I don't know, since October 3rd, like no meaningful inflows or outflows. Same with Bitcoin. We had a very big inflow days of $230 million on October 7th, but a couple days of $20 and $40 million outflows. Nothing terribly exciting happening in the ETF lands. Although I will say, we have known this for a while, but here at the Permissionless Conference, we had notable ETF experts, including Samara Cohen from BlackRock, kind of confirming our ideas about who is really buying these ETFs.
Yeah, who is it?
It's us.
It's us?
It's us.
It's you and I?
It's people, it's crypto people taking Bitcoin, Ether off-chain and putting it into BlackRock, into Bitwise, into Fidelity.
Okay.
And, you know, that's, I think, kind of was against expectations. People like, oh, once we open up the ETFs, the boomers are going to come. It's going to inflow all this retail. Turns out it's like tax advantage accounts. You can actually get yield on your Bitcoin ETFs. You can do security lendings with your Bitcoin ETFs, and people I think are scarred from Celsius, and so yeah. That has actually attracted, you know, retail crypto native capital, but it's actually crypto native capital here, which, you know, there's one take which is, well, that's bearish because yeah. We were hoping it was outside capital.
Yeah.
But my take, which is bullish, is that, well, the outside capital hasn't even come yet.
Oh, we're
still
early.
Just us.
We're
it
still
is
early.
These are the best ETFs, the top two ETFs of all time, and it was just us.
This entire time, and we've still been early. That's great. Do you want to talk about the ETH ratio or skip that on the week,
dude? 0.0397, trying to get it back above 0.04, kinda but
sad.
Other than that, still in sad zone. Total crypto market cap, where are we at on the week? 2.21 trillion dollars, coming in still kind of low. I want to see 2.5.
Are you looking at these jobs numbers? Let's switch to TradFi markets for a second.
I was not looking at these job numbers.
Okay,
the jobs numbers
have been pretty good apparently. So we've got the U.S. added far more jobs than expected in September. So analysts, I guess, were expecting a forecast of about 150,000 net new jobs, and we got 254,000 instead. So nice.
Is that why stocks are at all time highs?
I think so. It's
because
part of it.
When we have more jobs are going up. People are getting more jobs, and that is indicating a lack of recession. And now that we are having cutting interest rates and people are getting more jobs, that is indication that the recession is just not likely, less and less likely, which is why the stock market is going up. Is that the analysis?
I mean, the market's looking pretty good
in
general, right? So inflation looks like that has come down. Actually, let me go to this. Did you catch this Noah Smith blog post here?
I did not.
The title is, "Let's Pause to Appreciate the Remarkable U.S. Economy." And he goes over a few metrics. I thought this was pretty valuable. So number one, he talks about the job market.
Okay.
He's not looking at unemployment in this metric. He's looking at the employment population ratio. And apparently, this rate is holding at 80.9%, so above 80%, which is higher than before the pandemic and is, in fact, the second highest rate in U.S. history. Okay? And this is even a better indicator than unemployment for who wants a job. So pretty much everyone in the U.S. right now who wants a job has a job. So that's one metric. We've got some other metrics here he goes through. Of course, inflation. We've been talking a lot about that on Bankless. That's basically back to normal, right? So we have CPI that is sort of back in the 2 to 3% range, which feels pretty good from that perspective. So we've got inflation. We've got jobs going well. Wages and productivity are both up. So this is a chart of labor productivity output for all workers in the U.S. And if you're looking at this, you can see, I mean, we're kind of like close to a fairly good range and, you know, pre-COVID type ranges from a productivity perspective. And wealth, I mean, this is, you know, some people look at wealth and they see inequality, and that's also true. But like wealth is cruising towards all-time highs as well. Housing prices, a lot of good things in the U.S. economy at this point, including this. America is beating the world at this point. So this is real GDP growth in the G7 countries.
America is growing faster than any other country.
Yeah.
And so has been for like since COVID.
And like fairly significantly faster as well. I mean, it's just not a small thing. The
second place is Canada. Shout out America's hat.
Yeah. Shout out Canada. Doing okay as well. Anyway, the entire TLDR of this post is the U.S. economy is doing pretty well. Maybe we should pause and appreciate it. He does point to some storm clouds, which is deficit. Look at this last chart, David. This is federal surplus or deficit as a percentage of GDP. And we are like looking like the 1940s, you know, wartime sort of deficits. So the question is, hey, how much are the deficits actually contributing to all of these good times?
Right. So the economy is going super well, but the government is spending a lot. Those are correlated.
You'd also think that would be good
for crypto.
Not yet, though. We just have to wait for it. Maybe not October. We'll see. We still got a long month. David,
I feel like it's a safe-ish time to be in the markets. The markets feel like a safe place to be.
It doesn't
right
feel frothy.
It doesn't feel frothy.
Mean.
The recession feels to like a distant thing at this present moment. The only thing that's left for crypto is for people to care about crypto again.
Yeah.
Which is still a hard problem.
I mean, we'll talk about the permissionless conference, but that's been the vibe of the conference that we're attending as well. It's like not too hot, not too cold. It's like just right. This is, we're in the Goldilocks zone of crypto, and I think that's a good place to accumulate. But we always say that, don't we?
That's what we say. Coming up next, the Unichain finally here. How will it change DeFi now that Uniswap, the biggest app on the Ethereum Layer 1, is going to its own Layer 2 inside of the Optimism Superchain? HBO releases their Bitcoin documentary revealing who Satoshi is. They figured it out. No one in the Bitcoin space figured it out. HBO figured it out. Wow. And also, Ethereum got a proposal for lowering block times that might not compromise staking whatsoever.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about all this and more, but first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred crypto exchange in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the links in the show notes, getting started with Kraken today.
If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss.
The Uniswap wallet is officially the preferred wallet of Bankless, and it's the one we use anytime when we want to transact on chain. Whether you're on your browser or on the go, Uniswap Wallet makes it easier than ever to swap anytime, anywhere. Use your wallet to transfer funds directly from a top centralized exchange and tap in thousands of tokens across Ethereum and over 10 other chains like Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. Uniswap Wallet delivers deep liquidity, fast execution, and reliable quotes with zero gas swaps through Uniswap X. And when it comes to security, you can rest easy knowing it's backed by Uniswap Labs, one of the most trusted teams in DeFi. Their code is open source and independently reviewed, so you know it's protected. So why wait? Download the Uniswap wallet today on Chrome, iOS, and Android. And don't forget to claim your free uni.eth username directly in the mobile wallet. Start swapping smarter with Uniswap.
The Arbitrum portal is your one-stop hub to entering the Ethereum ecosystem. With over 800 apps, Arbitrum offers something for everyone. Dive into the epicenter of DeFi, where advanced trading, lending, and staking platforms are redefining how we interact with money. Explore Arbitrum's rapidly growing gaming hub, from immersed role-playing games, fast-paced fantasy MMOs, to casual luck battle mobile games. Move assets effortlessly between chains and access the ecosystem with ease via Arbitrum's expansive network of bridges and on-ramps. Step into Arbitrum's flourishing NFT and creator space, where artists, collectors, and social converge, and support your favorite streamers all on-chain. Find new and trending apps and learn how to earn rewards across the Arbitrum ecosystem with limited time campaigns from your favorite projects. Empower your future with Arbitrum. Visit portal.arbitrum.io to find out what's next on your Web3 journey.
Some people claimed it was inevitable. Others said it would never happen. But nonetheless, this week, Uniswap announced the Unichain, a brand new layer 2 designed to prioritize the needs of DeFi users and protocols. It is a layer 2 on the OP stack inside of the Optimism Superchain, developed in collaboration with Flashbots and Optimism, of course.
Flashbots, huh?
Flashbots, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. We'll get into the Flashbots element in a second. But some key benefits here. Very fast block times.
Yes.
200 to 250 millisecond sub block times is what they're targeting. Is currently the testnet is currently clocking in.
That's real fast, right?
1 second block times. That's very fast. Arbitrum has 250 millisecond block times.
Okay.
Solana has 400 millisecond block times.
Okay.
Uniswap is going for 200 to 250 millisecond block times, which, if it comes faster than Arbitrum can speed up his chain, would make it the fastest chain in crypto, period. That's pretty cool. Actually, Tim Roughgarden, who is the crypto economics expert out of Columbia, I believe.
Real smart guy.
Real smart guy. I'm dropping a Tim Roughgarden take. Actually measured that when you lower block times, you strictly lower aggregate MEV, which is important globally, but it's especially important for the liquidity locus of crypto at large. So when Uniswap has its own chain with very fast block times, we are materially reducing the amount of MEV that is getting extracted from the users and from the protocol, which is pretty cool. They've also got seamless multi-chain swapping because they're going to be a part of the Superchain, and the Superchain is going to come in with their interoperability plan soon. Swapping on the Uniswap will be very seamless inside of the Superchain. And then I think how this is going to work is they're going to fix perfect interoperability inside of the Superchain.
Yes.
And then they're going to export those lessons to the rest of the
Ethereum ecosystem. And let's remind people what the Superchain is, that this is the OP set of chains,
yes.
Right? So we've got a number of chains there. Base.
Base is a part of the Superchain.
OP.
OP mainnet. Mode Network, Zora is part of the Superchain, a bunch of others, which I'm not able to pull off the top of my head right now.
So all of that will feel like one seamless chain.
Mm-hmm.
You won't even know. It'll be seamless interoperability. The wallet experience will be all the same across all of these chains.
We are coming right off of the panel that I was just at with Alex Glukowski from ZK Sync, and he thinks that he can ship perfect interoperability for the ZK Sync Elastic chain sooner than Optimism can ship.
Make them fight.
Yeah. Which I think is just great. Okay, so big question.
Yep.
I own some Uni tokens. What does this do for my bags?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. You want to look at the charts and answer that question first?
Well, strictly, my bags are up 14.5%.
Is that on the day?
That's on the day. It's in the 24 hours.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Wait, so is this a market actually pricing a fundamental? Is that what just happened here?
Yeah, that's right. Somehow, this news actually was not priced in. And now it is up up to $8.26.
Wow.
But that's because the Uni chain will have Uni token staking. And everyone likes to stake their tokens. And what do you get for staking your tokens? This is what we asked Hayden on our podcast with him. So if you want to learn more about the Uni chain, go to that podcast. It's in your podcast feed. You stake the tokens for money. You stake the tokens, you get money. But
you have to do some work.
You have to do some work.
What's the work?
I don't know. Do you know?
Yeah. You have to, sequencer validation, basically.
Oh, you're a sequencer.
Yeah. You get to be a sequencer. So it's like a work token for the
Uni
chain network. Remember those work tokens?
It's always been part of the plan.
That's always been the plan. And what about the gas token of the Uni chain? What do you think that'll be?
I have a guess.
What?
It's not the Uni token.
Okay.
It's ETH.
I hope it
is. Because ETH is money.
We didn't ask that question, actually.
I think we just assumed.
Better be ETH.
It better be
ETH.
What else is it going to be? It's not going to be USDC. ETH is a dominant trading pair across Uniswap. It's going to be ETH.
This is a good tweet I enjoyed from Saigar. He said, some really cool innovations in Uniswap's L2. Uni staking to power sequencer validation, which we just talked about. Proposer builder separation powered by TEE block builders. Mm-hmm. I want to get you to explain that.
Sure.
Also, pre-comps from builders leading to lower latencies and protection from transaction reverts. Some of these seem very Flashbots inspired, very MEV reductionist, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what is this collection? The proposer builder separation, the pre-comps, the protection from transaction reverts. What is that and why is that important?
Yeah, this is the Flashbots influence here. TEEs is something that Flashbots has been meaningfully leaning into for a while now. We did an episode with Shay. I did an episode with Shay. It's on the Bankless Premium feed. About TEEs and the MEV supply chain.
Trusted execution environments.
Yeah. It's kind of like, call it like a secure enclave for block building or other things in the MEV supply chain. Sealing bids, protecting market orders, things like this. It's a little bit over my pay grade to fully flesh out on a weekly roll-up. But Hayden actually explained this very well on the episode as well. And so this is it's both Uniswap pioneering the app chain thesis into the Ethereum rollup centric roadmap, as well as the frontier that Flashbots is developing with MEV supply chains and TEE as well.
This is Hayden Adams saying, excited to announce the Unichain. This is a labor of love based on 6 years of designing and building in the DeFi space. We think what we're building will be the best home for DeFi.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. So in our conversation...
I've heard the home for DeFi is a line for a handful of layer 2s.
A lot of the L2s want to be the home for DeFi. I want to get your take on it.
I also would like to be the home for DeFi.
I mean, like the strongest, I think, take from Hayden in that episode that we did was basically, hey, Uniswap is doing the full stack, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the app.
Yep.
We're doing the wallet
got
stuff.
The front end.
We've got the protocol. We're doing kind of the decentralized exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And now... like a chain is kind of the full stack completion of that. When you look across the full stack, you can build a like comprehensive user experience that is high quality, second to none. So that was his case for why Unichain. Mm-hmm. And also, I think they want to be the home of liquidity for all of decentralized finance. But to your point, David, so does everybody else. A lot of other chains want to as well. How do you think this will emerge? Do you think this will be competitive with Base? Do you think this will create kind of like a super chain mafia, like competing against other economic zones? How do you think this all shakes out?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch this. I think the biggest deployment of Uniswap after the Ethereum layer one is, I think, Arbitrum's deployment of Uniswap, followed by Base's. And now there's going to be a chain. And there's also other deployments of Uniswap. There's Uniswap on ZK Sync. There's Uniswap. There's like 20 deployments.
So Ethereum.
Yeah, right. And so I think the Uniswap deployments inside of the superchain are going to kind of seed liquidity to the Uni chain first. Base probably, incentive-wise, is begrudgingly going to seed it, but like they also are a part of like kind of the ethos of the superchain. So superchain liquidity going to go to the chain. Non-superchain liquidity going to try to be retained. Like Arbitrum is going to try and retain its Uniswap liquidity as hard as possible. And then I think the amount of liquidity onside the Ethereum layer one Uniswap implementation of Uniswap is going to go to the Uniswap chain as a function of how good it is to do seamless interoperable cross-chain swaps. Mm. If you have to like bridge into the Unichain to then swap to bridge out, that's a lot of friction. People aren't going to do that. And if that's the case, then people are going to stay on the Ethereum layer one. And so I think the Unichain to Uniswap implementation on the Ethereum layer one, where that liquidity lies, will kind of be an index of how healthy the Ethereum rollup-centric roadmap is.
This is all MIT licensed, so completely open source, so anyone can sort of fork it. I think there's the objection out there. Okay, so like you guys are launching yet another Ethereum chain, right? That's going to fragment things further. Mm-hmm. And I think we're in the stage in Ethereum where we've fragmented a lot, and now we're going to reconverge. So it's like this pendulum, swinging from divergence back to convergence, and now we're moving back into the convergence era. Because I think what's going to happen, David, is we're going to have these superchain economic zones, whether it's kind of the Arbitrum stack or the ZK stack or the Polygon or the OP stack. They're going to be seamless and completely interoperable.
Inside of themselves.
So you'll have like four or five big economic zones. And then between these economic zones, we'll have intent standards that will pretty much provide abstracted. It'll feel like composability to an end user. It won't be complete, atomic synchronous composability, as Justin Drake says, across these different economic zones. But it'll feel pretty close.
That's how
Ethereum will all converge together. And I, for one, I'm pretty excited that there's more competition in this space. Even against Base, I'm so excited about Base and everything that they've done. In fact, Jesse, congratulated Hayden and the team for rolling this out. But it's good to see some competition in the mix, because we don't want any of the L2s to become absolute dominant, L2s and kind of like control everything across all of the ecosystems.
Yeah. You brought up intents. Intents are both going to help across the frameworks, like Arbitrum and the Superchain will be gapped by intents, but also internally to the Superchain, intents will also fill the gaps between chains. So even inside of these economic zones, intents still kind of fill the gap here. I know Hart from Across has actually been a part of this whole Unichain effort, because how are you going to swap on Unichain without swapping your assets over to the chain? It's going to be through intents. I think Across is playing a large role here. And even I was just on the panel with Alex from ZK Sync, and ZK chains actually have stronger cross-chain composability tech than the OP stacks do. That's just what ZK stacks do. And even ZK stacks will still need intents, at least in the short term, to still fill the gaps between their chains. And so I think this is how this is going to go. All of these frameworks are going to achieve perfectly perceived interoperability amongst themselves. We're going to learn lessons about how they did that for their own internal systems. We're going to be able to export those lessons to across the frameworks after that.
Someone who came on the Bankless podcast 2 years ago also wrote an article, predicted this, was Dan Alitzer. Mm-hmm. We should just like
shout out Dan. Foresight. Once again, nailed it.
Yeah, this is his tweet.
He doesn't take many at bats, but when he does, he hits them out of the park.
Yeah,
he's like five for five.
Yeah, so exactly like 2 years ago, September 29th, 2022, he wrote a blog post called The Inevitability of the Unichain. And I think his take was like, apps want to receive some portion of the value that they create through MEV. They don't want to give that all to validators, and so they'll all launch their own chains. Anyway, very, very prescient post. Did you notice this, David? At the time, Vitalik replied back in 2022 to this tweet, and he said he had a hard time believing Dan's argument. He didn't think necessarily that Uniswap would have its own app chain. He said, because the main value proposition of Uniswap is you can go and trade, done in 30 seconds, a Uniswap chain or even a rollup makes no sense in that context. Rather, a copy of Uniswap and every rollup does. Where do you think he was coming from back then, and what do you think he would say now?
I think this take came inside of the era of the pre-economic zone layer twos.
Yeah.
So in 2022, it was Optimism and Arbitrum and Polygon. And that was it. There was no superchain. There was no elastic chain. There was no the idea of economic zones with interoperability between chains was not an idea yet. And so in that world, we haven't even had the conversation of Ethereum as being fragmented yet. People were just having fun in layer two land. And so I think that was a 2022 date take. And now that we have these economic zones with, you know, intense are now a thing. This was also pre-intense. So there's just like a lot of tech that just wasn't there yet. It is interesting that Dan cited one of the reasons why Unichain was inevitable was because of MEV. Uniswap was one, and it still is, one of the largest burners of ETH, which is coming out of swappers and LPs.
Yeah.
Like, it's Uniswap, the app, leaking MEV. And so why make an app chain? Why make the Unichain? Well, it's because they want to retain MEV. And I think that's right. But also Hayden and Dan Robinson from Paradigm kind of made an update to that take. Dan Robinson says, the Unichain is not about capturing MEV for their sequencer. It's about building a platform with consistent rules that lets apps and users, not sequencers, control their MEV. And so what the Unichain, I think, is going to do is it is going to recapture the MEV, just like Dan Leeser said, but not to like pump it into the Uni token, but rather to give it back to LPs and give it back to users and just have a really efficient exchange.
Yeah, ultimately, I guess, you know, the hope is all of these MEV fees get back to users in the end, apps and then users in the end. One question for you, David. What do you think about Ethereum Layer 1? So there's been an ongoing conversation that we've been involved in, which is like the difference between the DeFi belongs on the Layer 1 versus DeFi belongs on Layer 2s. And the truth is, different types of DeFi belong on Layer 1 versus Layer 2, and you can kind of do both. But this would seem like Uniswap is the largest DeFi protocol on Ethereum, the layer one, the most successful. You think this is bad for the Ethereum mainnet? Of course, all of this, the L2s are built on top of Ethereum at the end of the day. But does this kind of, you know, take away some of the value proposition of ETH the asset?
I don't think so at all. And I think this whole like layer one, layer two debate is getting heavily over indexed on. Yet nonetheless, if you are at permissionless, this is coming out after my talk, but I'm in a debate tomorrow with Kyle Samani and Max Resnick. But on my team is Jill Gunter from Espresso.
Yeah.
So it's David Hoffman and Jill versus Kyle and Max about whether or not layer twos are extensions of Ethereum. In the future, there will not be, it's a layer two, it's a layer three, or what are we doing with the layer one? It's just going to be Ethereum. And the way that take is incorrect, I think, is in the world where there's like a very small minority of very dominant layer twos. I don't like that future. I do like the future where there is a wide pluralist mesh network of app chains like the Unichain, along with generalized layer twos, but with other features as well, base rollups, stronger layer one execution. We can actually really start to blur the line between what is the layer one and the layer two. Max Resnick wants to, quote unquote, make Ethereum great again by increasing the execution capacity of the Ethereum layer one in order to bring DeFi back to the layer one. I agree with the direction. We should increase execution of the layer one, but that's because it makes layer two execution better. Mm-hmm. And it also makes interoperability between layer twos also better. I want fast block times at the layer one, not to bring back DeFi to the layer one, but because it allows for a mesh network of DeFi apps to exist across the layer two. And there will be strong execution fees at the layer one because we have the Uni chain and the Aave chain and the Maker now Sky chain and all these other chains. And all of those are going to be executed on by the layer one.
And ETH being money across all of these economic zones.
When all the apps are capturing all the value, there's nothing left other than money.
So you're fighting with Kyle Samani too, not just Kane Warwick, huh?
Your boy's in a fighting mood.
Man, you are just fighting everybody this week.
And speaking of, I have to actually go square off against Kane.
What is squaring off?
They're going to take the photo of me and Kane like holding our fists up at each other.
Yes.
So I got to
get like close, like nose to nose.
Oh yeah. Uh huh.
Oh, that's gonna be great. Yeah.
If I had more time, I would have pulled some prank on him, like bought him flowers. Like, this is something that fighters do. They square off, and then
you're a fighter now, so you got to do these things.
I got to go square off with Kane. I'll be right back, and we're going to resume the weekly roll-up. But for you, listener, it's just going to start right now.
Okay, Dave, that was crazy, man. I just watched you in a face-off with Kane Warwick. That took about an hour, so we're
took
back.
Took a little longer than expected, yeah.
That was hype, man. There was promo. There was, like, they asked you questions. You said Kane was like a tree, pretty easy to knock down.
Tall guy, but skinny guy, you know? Won't take too many swings.
Oh, I still can't believe you're doing this. It's like, guys, it's like David up there on stage with a whole bunch of like MMA-looking fighters. It's just so, it's crazy to think we've gotten this far.
Yeah, I in my crypto journey, I didn't necessarily have fighting another founder on my bingo card.
This is what's happening.
I don't know how
though.
I ended up. Nick Carter is the reason why I'm here, and he's nowhere to be found. Somehow, he's elsewhere.
Anyway, we'll talk about more of that at the end of the show. Let's get to the HBO documentary, because this was another big reveal. This was
big news of the week is we discovered who Satoshi is.
Yeah, the revelation of Satoshi, and this was hyped up. So HBO premiered a documentary called Money Electric, The Bitcoin Mystery. It was based on this marketing claim that they had figured out who Satoshi Nakamoto was, the founder of Bitcoin. So everyone was curious going in as to who they would point to as the founder.
And maybe some setup here. If you don't know, there have been people who have done thousands and thousands of hours of work going through Satoshi emails, Bitcoin talk forums, cross-referencing time of day of posts with like geolocation,
the wording, the language, the writing style.
Writing style, just like the deepest kind of analytics. People have tried to figure out Satoshi. This is not the first time that anyone has ever tried to figure out Satoshi. To this day, we have a list of people which Satoshi could be. But also, if Satoshi wasn't anyone on the like list of likely candidates, I don't think that would also surprise anyone.
Do you want to see the list, David? So this is Polymarket, and there was a bid for who will the HBO documentary identify as Satoshi, right? Mm-hmm. So here's HBO, of course, after all the work that everyone has put in saying, hey, we figured it out. Right. Everyone else,
We've
we figured
got the
it
answer.
Out. And look at all of these names. So Gavin Wood, that's interesting. Nick Szabo, Craig Wright. Hal Finney, Dorian Nakamoto, Wei Dai, Adam Back, Gavin Andreessen. These are some of the Elon Musk.
Jed McCaleb. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These are some of the usual suspects I typically see.
But a lot of names.
A lot of names.
And interestingly enough, like I know this isn't actually who is Satoshi. This is who will HBO name as Satoshi.
Exactly.
Which is different. But the amount of money spread around these people is thin. As in like no one has actually decided it's anyone. Like, no, it could be anyone.
Okay, so who did they name?
Peter Todd, who is a Bitcoin OG developer in this space. I think you and I have both gotten into Twitter fights with him.
We've interacted with Peter Todd. He's been around.
He's a old school Bitcoin maxi.
He's a Bitcoin developer, too.
Bitcoin developer, right. That's right. They didn't even name Peter Todd as Satoshi. They kind of, like, accused him of being Satoshi.
Should we watch the clip?
Let's watch the clip, which is kind of the climax of the whole. I didn't watch the documentary, but this clip I think really just kind of encapsulates it.
Yeah, this shows what the vibe of the documentary was. Here it is.
Mm-hmm. A concept which you had envisioned years earlier, but you needed some kind of cover in order to make. And you also needed some cover for that 2010 post.
2010. Yeah, because I was Satoshi.
I mean, yeah, you know, you're very concerned about all the privacy stuff, so you reach out to your old buddy Adam Back, you say, we need to do something about this, but we need to pay the devs. But you can't join Blockstream because it would look too suspicious. So, you don't.
I will admit, you're pretty creative. You come up with some crazy theories. It's ludicrous. But it's the sort of theory someone who spends their time as a documentary journalist could come up with. So yeah, I'll say, of course I'm Satoshi, and I'm Craig Wright. And yes, I was definitely covering that little bit about, you know, fees to go pretend to be Satoshi or not Satoshi, one or the other.
Well, why make up the whole John Dillon thing?
Well, like I said, I'm not John Dillon.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm not John Dillon. I don't know who that is. I'll warn you, this is going to be very funny when you put this into the documentary and a bunch of Bitcoiners watch it.
That was Peter Todd speaking the entire time with Adam Back.
Adam Back also kind of chuckling in the background.
Okay, so what do you think about Peter Todd as Satoshi?
I mean, I think a bunch of people who don't know anything about Satoshi came into the industry and it was like, you know what, let's go figure out who Satoshi is. Got as close as they could that they needed to make a movie out of it, and now we're watching it.
It was super late. I feel like
it's pretty
super lazy.
It was pretty
like
cringe.
A better way to do a documentary like this is to go through the evidence for each of
for
the
everyone,
names
yeah.
on that list
mm-hmm.
and leave it as a question mark, yeah. but do the deep dive due diligence right. for everyone, not right. to just a
if you're not confident in your answer, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's still a good story.
Yeah. They were following Peter Todd around with a camera, like accusing him yeah. of being Satoshi. Uh-huh. And this is just like absolutely ludicrous. He
right.
would be like pretty low on my list
very
of
low,
actual
yeah.
you know, Satoshi suspects. So Peter Todd replied, "Of course I'm not Satoshi." In the aftermath of this, it's ironic that a director who is also known for a documentary on QAnon has resorted to QAnon-style coincidence-based conspiracy thinking here too.
Mm-hmm.
Much hype about nothing. I feel like this is a big nothing burger, David.
It,
but
it is
there
a
you
big
go.
Nothing burger. Yeah, we're talking about it. It was good viral marketing.
Yeah,
but I think like it's the viewers of this documentary are just going to be like. Bitcoiners and crypto people hate watching it because of how cringe it was.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure who this documentary was for
like,
at the end of the day.
Unless any new data comes out, we are at the end of the discoverability of Satoshi. Like, no one is going to figure it out. If they haven't figured it out by now, it's actually in the history.
Yeah.
The halls of history.
Like, here's an example of an angry Bitcoiner take. The HBO documentary is disgusting. It's baffling they reached this conclusion when all Bitcoin experts disagree. It's like making a flat Earth documentary without review from scientists and promoting it as unveiling Earth's secrets,
mm-hmm.
the flat Earth.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. We still do not know who Satoshi Nakamoto is, and it's probably better off that way that we don't. Let's talk about
Hawktua.
Hawktua? Wait,
yeah, that's who's on your screen right now.
Oh.
I thought it was pretty funny. So Hawktua girl, she just tweets out, HBO was wrong. I'm Hawktoshi Tua Moto. And there's a Hawktua laser-eyed, Michael Saylor-esque meme, AI-generated meme that she created. I thought it was pretty funny.
Man, she knows how to get into
dude,
like every single week's
the crypto
news.
Crypto Twitter community has somehow like I found the attention of Hawktua.
Does she have a meme coin? If
she does
not
have a meme coin, not that I know of.
I mean, not yet.
No.
She's
got a Mad Lads PFP. And now she's doing Sailor memes.
It's wild.
Nothing about Ethereum, though.
Can I tell you about FBI coin, David? This is kind of weird.
The FBI coin?
Yeah, so it's not like maybe I oversold that. It's not an FBI coin. So here's the headline this comes from Reuters. The U.S. charges 3 companies and 15 people with cryptocurrency fraud.
Oh,
okay?
That's not a coin at all.
Yeah, so apparently these were market-making companies, and they primarily market-made for meme coins. So where that eventually led was, of course, pump and dump.
Was it market-making?
Fake yeah. trade volume, you know, all those sorts of things. The interesting part of this story is not that they were busted, although that in itself is interesting. It's the length the FBI actually went to. You know, the FBI is very famous for going undercover, you know, doing
yep.
things surreptitiously.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, what they actually did was they launched a token, David.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI launched their own token, and they formed this company. It's called the Next Fund AI Token
uh-huh.
with a company around it, Next Fund AI. And here's a quote. The FBI took the unprecedented step of creating its very own cryptocurrency token and company to identify, disrupt, and bring these alleged fraudsters to justice. The Next Fund AI token was a cryptocurrency token created at the direction of law enforcement. So this is the FBI with a crypto wallet, like minting a coin in order to lure these pump and dump, you know, scammers.
Pump and dump market makers. So they wanted to be a client of these market makers
yeah.
who are actually pump and dump, you know,
in order to identify them in order. I,
right.
I don't know if this, you know, what is does this cross the line into entrapment? I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand these types of things, but
does the FBI, are they beholden to entrapment? I don't even know.
I don't know how that works. But anyway, this is Next Fund AI. They had an entire website around this, and this is how they rooted out this group of market maker scammers, and yeah, now they're in custody.
Your job is to make a trap meme coin to target to find scammers. What was interesting is actually Zach XBT actually predicted this, the downfall of Gotbit, which is these market
one,
makers.
One of the market makers?
One of the market
one
makers.
One of these three companies?
He tweeted out in September of 2023, so a year ago, "I would be wary of any projects you see working with the market maker Gotbit, as a leaked report shows highly questionable services being offered. They claim, during the first minutes in the price discovery stage, we are going to push the price up to 10x to create FOMO and accumulate as much buying power as we can to reach extreme X's.
Not even
trying
to hide it.
Maximum tokens on the subsequent spike." And I think the people are asking, like, well, is that illegal? And the FBI is saying, yes. Yes, it is illegal.
I know crypto Twitter is incredibly excited about meme coins. It's just like, as I've said before on Bank, this is kind of like not my thing. So like, people are free to do it. Fantastic. If you like meme coins, go do it. I will say, though, there's so much surface opportunity for scams and frauds in the meme coin world. There's this like narrative that, like, you know, only the VCs do the pump and dump. They're dumping on retail, and meme coins are pure and good and noble and true. And then, like, you see cases like this.
Right.
It's very easy to manipulate these markets. And that's actually what's happening behind the scenes.
Meme coins are pure in that there wasn't structural amounts of capital getting early. Like, VCs are not getting early on meme coins.
Yeah.
But somebody is still getting early somewhere. And it's actually not structural. It's actually not really known by the market. And so I think this is kind of opening up the question is, like, how do we ask and get transparency out of meme coins?
Well, yeah, some of the meme coin influencers are under the microscope. So this is Ansem. This is actually Polymarket on Ansem. Ansem criminal charges. Will he face criminal charges in 2024? And there's a 10% chance that he will. And this actually spiked up at some various points in time.
Right when
these criminal charges got released. There was also earlier in the week, David, Zach XBT, yet again, released a list, doxed the wallets of Marad. So Bankless sisters, maybe you saw Marad. He's going all around crypto Twitter. He was at Token 2049. He is sort of the messiah of meme coins, kind of the most current manifestation of sort of a, I think you would say, a cult leader of meme coins. He basically thinks they're incredibly bullish. He thinks this is the breakout retail use case. And he has a list of meme coins that he thinks are going to like 10x, 100x this cycle. And Zach XBT disclosed a set of his wallets, $25 million worth of meme coins. And a lot of people were saying, hey, why are you doxing someone in crypto? Like, not cool. That's dangerous. Don't do that. Zach's reply was, you know, Marad requires some accountability.
Yeah,
he's the one promoting these meme coins. We should know whether he's pumping and dumping, like whether he's selling. Like, this transparency is necessary. What's your take on this?
I think if you are using public influence and you are talking about meme coins, then the public does deserve some level of transparency about what's going on. That is what I think. I think that is fair.
Yeah. Disclosures.
Disclosures are just a totally fair thing to ask for.
Hey, bankless.com/disclosures, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You see our activities.
Yeah. And so, okay, so there's like the highly illegal, like definitely on the black and white side of things, definitely in the black activities of this like market making funds that the FBI went after. And then there's like a spectrum of like questionable activity before there. And then there's like highly legit activity. And like the cryptocurrency players of the meme coin game exist across all spectrums of that, like, you know, above boardness or below boardness. And I think that's like why Ansem is at like 10% and not like 1% or 100%. There's not a clear line as to like what's a clear pump and dump or what it would just be kind of like organic market activity.
I feel like people think there's not some clear lines, but these market makers, right, doing wash trading, like, yeah, clearly, you read the text, market makers website, we're gonna just 100x this coin.
The intent there was like pretty damning.
Use some common sense.
Yeah.
If it's illegal in the real world, it's definitely illegal in crypto, and these things will catch up to you. It's all on chain. David, what do we got coming up?
Coming up next, a brand new EIP to make all of Ethereum layer one 33% better. We're going to talk about that. Gary Gensler sends another Wells notice, but then he just gets a Uno reverse card played right in his face. And then we're also going to talk about permissionless, because this conference, I think, has been great, and I want to talk to you about it. But we're going to get to all of these subjects and more, but first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible.
New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi, and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation. Radically simple ideas always tend to catch on. That's why Cartesi did the hard work of putting Linux on chain, so that building dApps can be radically simple by using Python or JavaScript and their suite of libraries. Simple, like not rebuilding the basics from scratch. Simple, like dedicated scalable compute for your dApp. Simple, like building dApps however you want. Web3 should be simple too, like bread and butter. Cartesi brings radically simple solutions to Ethereum, so developers can do what they do best. Build. Go ahead and discover a flexible modular stack on Cartesi and build your most powerful, ambitious project yet. Visit cartesi.io/simple and simplify your blockchain journey and start building today.
Who is the new crypto company on the block to get a Wells notice from the SEC? Welcome crypto.com to the Cool Kids Club. Congratulations on your Wells notice. Also, even cooler, responding with just suing the SEC response. So the SEC, what's a Wells notice? A Wells notice is the SEC saying, hey, we intend to sue you in the future.
Heads up, we're going to sue you.
Heads up, we're going to sue you. And then crypto.com is saying, we are currently suing you as a response to you threatening to sue us.
Yeah, what are they suing them for? Like, what's crypto.com saying?
Okay, so crypto.com says it is suing the SEC after receiving a Wells notice from them. According to the complaint, the Wells notice involves allegations that crypto.com is operating as an unregistered broker-dealer and securities clearing agency. Man, I have heard this movie so many times before. In the complaint, it says the SEC is now threatening enforcement action against crypto.com in regard to secondary market sales of tokens on the platform. Even though the SEC does not have jurisdiction over those sales and cannot lawfully regulate the market absent action from Congress, a fact recognized by members of the commission itself. So just kind of just like stiff-arming the SEC. Yeah.
And the Wells notice was, again, for like, you know, selling illegal securities.
Doing what Coinbase does, what Kraken does, like all the other reasons why all these other companies have gotten Wells notices. And I think like crypto, since like crypto.com is like the seventh company to get one of these, they're just like stuffing it. They're just like, take it to the court. Like,
also,
fine.
SEC Commissioner Mark Ueda was on Fox Business actually and commented on this. So let's play that.
What is the SEC doing regarding crypto?
Well, I think our policies and our approach the last several years have been just really a disaster for the whole industry. We have been setting this policy through enforcement. We've done nothing to provide guidance on it. And as a result, this is being shaped by the courts. And different courts have ruled different ways. I think what this Wells notice is, and while I won't comment on the specifics of this litigation, the Wells, what has gone on is part of a broader frustration with the fact that we have not provided interpretive guidance as to what you can and cannot do. And if you are involved in some sort of securities offering, how you register, how you get regulated as a broker-dealer, how you get registered as an exchange.
Listen to that, David. Our approach, this is the SEC commissioner, not Hester Peirce, another SEC commissioner saying our approach to crypto has been a disaster. Absolute disaster, saying this publicly.
It's very refreshing to hear that.
There was a reflection from Gabe Shapiro about like Gary Gensler's strategy. He said this, crypto.com suing the SEC after a Wells notice. Gensler went with probably the highest risk, highest reward strategy imaginable for a careerist liberal term Democrat. In my opinion, he will be remembered for losing big.
but he will be remembered. What is Gary's strategy here? He just keeps losing. He's like losing the faith of the public, his own commissioners, the government. I don't know who is still in his court. I guess he'll be remembered, but maybe not in the way he intends.
Yeah, I guess we'll kind of see what the end game is with what happens to him at the end of this election. I don't think he is going to stay put in either presidency. I don't think he's going to be the SEC commissioner. Worst case is that he stops being SEC commissioner, but he gets promoted by Kamala. But I think there's a plenty valid path that Kamala actually also quietly fires him and pretends like the Democrats were never actually pro-Gensler ever. But we know the Trump administration is very anti-Gensler. One of the big things that happened this week, Robinhood Chief Legal Officer Dan Gallagher is one of the leading candidates for Gary Gensler's replacement if Trump wins. So Trump is talking about the current Robinhood CLO, Chief Legal Officer Dan, who's actually a previous SEC commissioner, I believe, previously a Republican SEC commissioner from 2011 to 2015.
Yeah.
And so one of the candidates for the SEC commissioner if Trump wins. I think that would be very good.
Gallagher, I think, would be very pro-crypto. Yeah. So that would be a fantastic Gary Gensler replacement. There's some EIP news coming out on the week. So something about improving the layer one. What was this EIP?
It's like a global 33% improvement of Ethereum of a number of different metrics. So EIP 7781 to make Ethereum faster by 33%, authored by Ben Adams, a Nethermind co-founder, one of the client teams of Ethereum. Reduce block times by 33% from 12 seconds to 8 seconds, which would reduce the base rollup latency, would increase, of course, transaction throughput by 33%, which would also increase the number of blobs. So we can actually keep the blob count the same. We can keep the gas target the same. But everything else just gets 33% faster.
More capacity for layer twos then. And it's actually starting to fill up, right? What are we, like 75, 80%
at capacity? We're not far away from at capacity with blobs. And we do not want to be at capacity with blobs. We always want to have slack for more blobs.
Because
then you induce more demand for blobs by increasing more layer twos.
Sure.
Which is the rollup-centric roadmap.
Sure.
More app chains. Because and we just got the Uni chain. But what about the Aave chain?
Right.
You know? What about the MakerDAO chain? What about all the other app chains?
And our existing layer twos are just getting started, getting started. So they're going to be hungry for some blob space. The nice thing about this EIP is it doesn't actually increase a solo staker bandwidth requirements,
right,
at least the peak bandwidth requirements. So you're not going to have to get a faster connection as a solo staker for peak time. So it's a nice compromise from that perspective. I want to zoom out and ask the question.
I actually don't know how that works.
Yeah.
How do we not increase the bandwidth, but we are increasing the block size?
The bandwidth, but my understanding is you're not increasing the peak bandwidth, which is kind of the constraint here, a bit more of the constraint.
Okay.
And I'm not sure the subtleties or technicalities that go into that, but it might be a nice compromise.
It was cool seeing Vitalik's comment where he thinks that we can make a trade-off. He's saying the 32 ETH staking barrier is actually a larger barrier than the bandwidth requirements. And
it's
so
capital. It's expensive.
What if we lowered the barrier down to some lower minimum, like 16, and then we also upped the bandwidth requirements? And so taking down 32 to 16 would, in theory, double the amount of solo staker supply available.
Yeah.
But then you can use that slack that you just created by upping the bandwidth requirements.
Yeah.
So more solo stakers are enabled by lowering the bandwidth and by lowering the ether requirements. And then you can kind of find more of those solo stakers in higher networked areas to be solo stakers, 16 ETH solo stakers in high network areas.
So what do you think? Do you think the conversation around improving the layer one in Ethereum has resulted in this EIP being proposed and being crashed?
This EIP is a direct reaction to some of the recent Ethereum roadmap conversations. And again, all of the Ethereum roadmap conversations, I was listening to a Tushar talk here at Permissionless, and he was talking about, and even Kyle at Token was like, oh yeah, and Ethereum is now doing soul searching around its roadmap. And we're like, yo buddy, let's calm it down. We are talking about merely reprioritizing a future part of the roadmap and bringing it up to today. And that is what this EIP is.
Yeah, some gradual incremental changes that we can get in fairly quickly, which is good. Yeah, I think that's bullish. David, do you see this video clip from the IMF? This is her name is Julie Kozak. She's a director of communications at the IMF. So this is a big banking cabal, the International Monetary Fund. And this clip that we're about to play, it's almost chilling.
It's
the IMF telling a sovereign country, the sovereign country of El Salvador, what to hold on their balance sheet and cautioning them about holding Bitcoin. Let's play it.
With respect to the details on Bitcoin, what we have recommended is a narrowing of the scope of the Bitcoin law, strengthening the regulatory framework and oversight of the Bitcoin ecosystem, and limiting the public sector exposure to Bitcoin.
You hear that? So the IMF says if you want to play with the big banks like us, you better limit the public sector exposure to Bitcoin. Get that Bitcoin off your balance sheet.
The juxtaposition of like one of the members, the leaders of the biggest banking cabal in the world, telling a nation state that they need to limit public sector accessibility of Bitcoin is like the exact opposite of what I'm here to do.
Right.
That is just the opposite of what I want. The audacity of someone telling that a country that they're going to limit the public in any way. You don't get to just limit the public.
That's
you
a check on to, El Salvador's democracy.
Do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's anyway.
Unlimit the public.
They said the quiet part out loud. Which
yeah,
is like,
yeah. It was like, do you hear yourself, lady?
I don't understand. Oh, also, there's some news. While you were away fighting, I added this link to the roll-up. So the World Liberty Financial released some additional details. One, World Liberty Financial, of course, this is the Aave DeFi protocol. Some people are calling this TrumpFi. You know, it's like Trump's version of DeFi on Aave. So two things happened. One is there's rumor of a raise, a $1.5 billion raise.
Okay? Valuation.
A valuation, I should say. $300 million raise. $1.5 billion valuation. And they also posted on the Aave governance forms.
Oh, they're in the Aave governance
forms?
Yeah,
they're in the Aave governance forms, and they're basically proposing that Aave would earn 20% of protocol fees generated by this Aave V3 instance and receive 7% of WLFI tokens, that World Liberty Financial's actual tokens, in exchange for, I suppose, using Aave in this way.
Interesting. Okay, so it's increasingly like World Liberty Financial is just a reskinning whitelist of Aave, and they're also making proposing economic transactions with Aave for incentive alignment.
Yeah, I mean, it's not crazy whether it will have any traction or product market fit, whether anyone's like, oh, this is a unique user experience, you know, like I don't want to use just generic Aave, I want to use TrumpFi. Whether there's a market for that, I don't know. But yeah, the fact of the matter
is there
probably is, right? There probably is. And the fact of the matter is maybe the market VCs anyway are valuing this at $1.5 billion. Oh, and they're going
VC
to.
What VC do you think is going to do this?
Well, they're going to do a token as well. So this is not a straight ICO. I believe it'll be accredited investor type tokens. Right. It'll have lockups. So, you know, it could be angels, could be VCs, could be all sorts of capital.
63% of the supply will be sold to the public in the future.
I guess the point, though, is it's Aave. You know, it's like nothing crazy here.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, it's Aave in the back end, but you're investing in distribution. Investing in Aave distribution.
Well,
honestly, hugely bullish for Aave.
Well, this is what Mark Zeller says. The valuation, just with the 7% of tokens that World Liberty Financial would give to the Aave DAO, that's valued at $105 million at a $1.5 billion valuation. So, thank you.
I mean,
like,
if World Liberty Financial is successful, you would think that it would attract at least a couple billion dollars of deposits into World Liberty Financial, into Aave. If World Liberty Financial is at all successful, it's just like Aave just wins. And World Liberty wins, but Aave wins.
I mean, it's increasingly not looking like a scam, right? It could be a white label, low value proposition thing.
It's the most innovative project.
It's definitely not. No.
But also, again, like, what does crypto need the most? Like users, capital, and dividends distribution.
Well, another thing it needs, actually, is protection from, you know, regulators like Gary Gensler who are trying to shut it all down. And this is Donald Trump doing it. So
imagine having like the president of the United States is like associated with your like DeFi protocol.
Yeah.
Can you get FDIC insurance on World Liberty Financial?
I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no idea.
Depository protections?
Well, this is a project that's worth looking at, so we'll continue to provide you guys updates. All right, David, let's as we get to the close of this weekly roll-up, let's talk about permissionless. So yeah. How's the conference been for you, man?
Well, first, I actually want to get your take because your last conference was permissionless too.
Yeah. and the one before that
was
as well.
Permissionless one.
Yep.
How does this one compare?
I feel like this is higher quality is what I would say. Not that the previous ones were low quality,
yeah.
But this is even higher quality. So the content, the speakers, phenomenal. The people I'm running into, talking to, I think we're still in the settler era. And I think all of kind of the people who are here for just like, meme coin and just like short termism type stuff, they went to Singapore.
Yeah, they did not come to permissionless.
They didn't come here. So what you're seeing is really high quality, like, the events that I'm going to, the people I'm talking to, I mean, these are DeFi crypto settlers in the U.S. And it's just great to see. So higher quality. Also, again, at the intro, you said it feels like the Goldilocks zone right now of crypto, where we've been to permissionless one was like too much. It was we're still in hype season. You know, it was a little too much. And then permissionless two was bear market blues. This is like it's perfect. It's a lot of building going on.
Yeah. It feels like a little bit of ETH Denver 2019 for me.
Yeah.
That was also the last ETH Denver before the ETH Denver side event meta really cropped up. I think permissionless is the last, I'll call it monolithic conference. You've been paying attention because I come and tell you about all these conferences that I go to. All of them have just like sharded into 1,000 side events.
Oh,
to the point where they fragment into side events. Because side events are kind of cool. And so people are running around like maniacs trying to go to as many side events as possible. No one's end up going to the main events anymore. And then you go from like, breakfast, lunch, or dinner side events to happy hour side events to parties. And permissionless is actually just not any of that. It's actually the last monolithic conference that I think exists.
The content's good.
The content is really good. I'm going to leak a statement from somebody who I actually can't name, but she, very, very prominent person in the crypto industry, and was like, told my source, do not schedule any meetings for me in the first day of Wednesday, because I want to go to all of the talks.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And then I think yesterday there were like three side events. One of them was Galaxy Digital. Another one, I can't remember. And then the third one was ours. Three total side events is like unheard of, and they all started after the conference ended.
Yeah.
So the conference ended at like 4. Side events started at 6.
It was side events for hanging out. It wasn't side events for like
no
whole separate content.
club side events. Like we had our side event at a brewery with a ton of space.
Oh, it's so
it
chill.
It was great not being in a massive crowd.
Yeah.
I don't know. You've never been to like these oversaturated side events, but like they're just so
I know
crazy,
the vibe. Yeah, I know the vibe.
There's like a lot of fitness going on. I'm looking at people having a pull-up bar competition behind you. There's a flex arm hang over there. Tomorrow, tonight actually, there's a pickleball tournament.
Yeah.
There's
a run
actually
this morning.
A lot of activities going on.
Yeah, Ben from Bankless Ventures put on a run. This is Jesse Echtel, who had the pleasure of meeting at the Bankless Citizen at the party.
Jesse.
Day one of Permissionless, and it's already my favorite conference I've ever attended. No fluff. The people here are the top 1% of the space. Haven't had a boring conversation yet. I've loved nearly every single talk and session I've attended, not zoning out halfway through. And then he gave a shout out for the Bankless meetup. He said it was the best side event he's ever been to.
Yeah.
No blaring club music, and I could actually talk to people.
Dude, the number of times I have been at some sort of club-based side event, and I am yelling in a crowd of 3 other people about some niche crypto infra topic while there is a DJ and laser lights in the background. And like that's the whole side
honestly,
of it.
That's what I want to talk to people
that's what
about.
I want to answer.
I'm with my nerds only once a year. I want to talk about nerdy shit.
And
I'm
so
sorry.
So we got a brewery with a big outside space. I played Jenga for like 2 hours yesterday.
Jenga. That's so good. Okay, but that's not the end. All right. So Bankless listeners, this comes out on Friday. What's today? The 11th. It's coming out Friday the 11th.
Yeah.
So this evening, David is going to be fighting. He's going to be...
Friday evening.
Friday evening. So when people hear this, it'll be your evening. David will be fighting it's not the octagon, in the karate combat pit. Look at this. I've got a picture on the screen of the what the pit looks like. This is just adjacent to the conference, so people can go there. Mm-hmm. And we will be live streaming this event, okay? So I think I'm going to be commenting it. Maybe I'll have someone with me. I have no idea what I'm going to say or what's going to happen, having never attended one of these events before. But we'll be watching David live, and you were challenging Kane Warwick.
Of Synthetics,
What?
Who we just invested in.
Yes. So 2 rounds, right? Two two-minute rounds.
Two rounds, 2 minutes each, with an optional third round if there's a tie. If there needs to be a tiebreaker of 1 minute. And the kind of like, it's the influencer flight club. People are going for the spectacle. If you make it both rounds, like you get the third round.
Oh, you get a third. Okay.
You get the third round just for, to do the tiebreaker. Yeah.
Okay.
So maximum possible 5 minutes.
All right. So, I was just there at the face off thing. Kane said he was going to knock David out.
Yeah. He did say that.
I mean, anyway.
I mean, everyone says that. Everyone really says that. Let's be real. I wasn't going to say it just because, like, everyone says that.
This is the Poly Market right now. You're up a little bit on the week, David. 37% chance. Maybe that's not...
Poly Market is fading me.
Poly Market's fading you. There's another market with some more favorable numbers that is maybe more reflective of the reality.
It's 24 hours ahead of the fight. The actual karate combat market goes up, which is a very similar market. Instead of winning one side's money, you'd actually just win karate token emissions.
Yeah.
It's kind of like up only betting. No one actually loses money. But these are the people, these are like the karate combat fans, the people who like open up the app, who are follow along with the league.
Okay.
I'm going to call this
the smart money. Of course they are.
Who understands the league and fighters and fighting generally.
So what's the smart money saying?
Unlike Poly Market, which clearly has a bunch of emotional feelings baked into the market.
And the smart money, we should say, is 80% odds.
82% odds, right. David Hoffman.
That was this morning. It might be dropping a little bit, but it's a much higher, much more favorable to David Hoffman. Mm-mm. So guys, if you want to catch that, see Bankless Fight Night. I don't know what it's going to be.
Bankless Karate Combat.
Friday Combat. Yeah. We'll be streaming that on Bankless YouTube. So just type Bankless in YouTube and we can watch David live, cheer him on, bet with him, hopefully not bet against him, and wait for him to knock down that tall tree, which is Kane Warwick.
Tall skinny tree. Tall skinny tree.
All right, let's end it there. Risks and disclaimers. Fighting other people is risky. So is crypto. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
Hoffman, to the stage. David Hoffman weighs in at 170.5 pounds. All right, and his opponent, Kane. Kane weighs in at 170.5 pounds. All right, let's step up front, guys. Can we get a face off? Right here. Face off, there we go. All right, this is fight of the night. This is your main event right in front of you right now. All right, let's face off. Let's go, let's make some noise. This is your main event. What's going on here? Let's do it, all right. Now, David, you were supposed to fight Nick Carter.
That's right.
You received a rib injury and you have recovered over that. How was that journey to get to this fight, and are you ready?
I challenged Kane because I worked really hard with my training for my fight with Nick. I never got to have that fight with Nick, and so I want to put all that training to good use. And so here we are.
Here we are. All right, now to Kane. Kane, you seem to have a slight age difference between you and your opponent. Sorry, I got to bring it up, all right? Father time isn't the best when it comes to combat sports, but it has been beaten. Do we see you beating Father Time and beating your opponent, David, in the pit tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. By the time we get finished tomorrow, he's going to wish that he was fighting Nick Carter.
Ooh, strong words. All right, now, do we have any predictions?
Yeah, we're going to see a knockout.
Knockout, any round?
Whenever it happens.
Whenever it happens is what he says. Do you have any predictions?
Kane is a tall tree, and they're easy to knock down.
Oh, okay, so this man he's chopping trees. All right, I love to hear it. Okay, now, you guys are actually friends. In our last main event, they were friends as well. What brings you to want to fight your friend?
For the memes. For the memes.
What about you?
I mean, he challenged me, and I was like, let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, well, this is your main event. Let's make some noise for these guys right now. And they will be throwing it down. Main event, IFC 5. It is going down. All right.